Talking about besides the halacha of Chol of Yisrael, which means that the Jew has to be involved in the milking process, see the milking process, and we said and we mentioned that there's some poiskim, Rav Moshe Feinstein's kula and the Pri Chadash and all that. That if you know for sure that there's no concern of the Jew, of the non-Jew mixing in non-kosher milk, that maybe that's okay. Besides for that, there's a gezeira of Gvinas Akum. And we said Gvinas Akum is a problem that the non-Jew may use non-kosher ingredients to make the cheese, to harden the cheese.
The rennet
or any of the natural or chemicals and enzymes that are found in the meat in order to make the cheese. And that's a new gzera called Gvinas Akum. And we mentioned last week that there's two sheets how to make sure it's called Gvinas Yisrael. The Ramah says you have to see it, and the Shach says you actually have to be the one making the cheese. Okay, and we discussed different ramifications of that halacha last week of Gvinas Yisrael. Okay, now we mentioned last week also what we ended off last week was we discussed also what's the halacha if the non-Jew milked the cow for the purpose of making cheese, and then you buy the milk, it could be it's a problem. But if he did it al das to make cheese, and then he actually made the cheese, so the Rama says b'di'eved, if there'll be a hefsid, you can go ahead and buy that non-chal v'yisrael cheese, and it will be called gvinas yisrael. Because as long as the Jew was involved or saw the making of the cheese, even though they used non-chal v'yisrael, since the milk that was used was a milk that was milked al das to make into cheese, so it's not likely that they actually mixed in any chal of tomei, any treif milk. And memela, the fact that now you're buying cheese, that makes it okay. B'di'eved. Now I saw that Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in the tshuva that even those that don't want to rely on my heter to drink chol of stam, Rav Moshe Feinstein's heter is that nowadays in this country at least, people, since they're afraid of the government rules for inspections and all that, so it's considered your knowledge of the fact that it's most likely milk from a kosher animal makes it as if you saw it. So Ramosha says, even though Ramosha himself says that a bal nefesh should not rely on this all that, but he says, but once it was made into cheese, then you don't have to be machmer at all. So as long as you have kosher cheese that was made with non-chal of Yisrael milk, Ramosha says you don't have to be machmer, because now it's two chumras. One chumrah is the chal of Yisrael chumrah, and then the second chumrah on top of that is the chumrah of the Ramah. If you're buying the cheese from the guy, as long as you saw the cheesing process, that's enough now to kasher up the milk. So, for example, you have like Miller's cheese, and some cheeses, kosher cheeses, are not made from chal of Yisrael. So Rav Moshe goes on to say that would be okay. The question we brought up last week was that's understandable if the plant actually makes their own milk, and has their own milking part, so they milk the cows for the use of their cheese. So that would work. But if they're buying their cheese, their milk from a different factory, okay, so they're buying their milk from a different source, and that source is not necessarily doing it for just them. They're doing it for all over. Would that be enough? So you were saying it was a lot of svara. You wanted to say last week, because, well, they're not going to lose their customers. They don't want to mix in something, even though you're right. Very often they're going to just send off, they're going to send it off to people that are to farms that are just selling milk, but they're also trying to get customers buying it for cheese. So Rav Moshe mentions this svar. Rav Moshe says, since amongst their customers are those that want to buy cheese, make cheese out of it, it's considered that they milked it al das to use it for cheese. Okay.
That was that shaila.
We went on to the shaila last week of soft cheeses. Okay? And the shaila of the soft cheeses that we left off was cottage cheese, ricotta cheese, Okay? So, the Moshe's tshuva about cottage cheese is very, very unclear. I mean, he's not thrilled with going either way. But at least he deals with the possibility of arguing that it's not considered cheese for the purpose of Gvinas Akum. Because since the way you make cheese is it's from a bacterial it's a bacteria that basically ends up causing the reaction in the milk, and the milk becomes the cheese itself. You don't have to bring in a foreign enzyme or a foreign chemical in order to turn it into cheese. So this type of cheese is not included in the gzera. Okay, the Aruch HaShulchan is machmer, but Ramosha has a tzad to be mekel, and this is a big subject of dispute amongst the kashrus agencies. Do we go with this kula that would allow to use chol of stam? You know, so let's say you want to be machmer only on chol of Yisrael. Can a hechsher give a hechsher to non-chol of Yisrael products that are now in the cheese state? No, I'm sorry. In other words, if they are chol of Yisrael, maybe, but you're not involved in the making it into the cheese. That's the problem. You have regular hashgacha, but you're not making it into the cheese, so it's not gvinas Yisrael.
How is it different from making regular cheese?
Because the way you make regular cheese is you take milk and then you throw in a foreign enzyme, the rennet or whatever.
Right.
But the cottage cheese,
I don't know how to make that.
So apparently the cottage cheese, basically it's the milk spoils, and it's the bacteria in the milk itself which causes it to harden. So there's no foreign entity which is introduced in order to harden it. That's the idea of the soft cheeses.
Same thing with sour cream.
Yeah, all these things, yogurts.
All of these are natural fermentation.
Correct.
Lemon.
Well, it doesn't need anything. It could just be left out with time, and eventually, you know, it will turn into that. You know, the internal bacteria will turn it in. Now, Ramosha does say.
So it's a fermentation.
Yes. So Ramosha says that even though nowadays in the places they do introduce rennet, but the reason they do the artificial rennet, but the reason they do that is just to hurry up the process. But since the process would take place anyway, so Ramosha wants to say there's no gzera of gvinas akum on these cheeses, and therefore you don't have to watch the process as carefully as you would cheese. So as long as you have chol Yisrael, and you have proper hashgacha, remember, the hashgacha that you need for a regular product is just a yotzei v'nichnas, let's say potato chips. Okay, the Hers factory is kosher, right? How often do you think the mashgiach is there?
Once a month.
Once a month, pops in. For gvinas Yisrael, you got to be there the entire day, to the point that I mentioned last week from the shach, that he has to be turning on the machine. So if you would say for cottage cheese,
he doesn't have to be there the entire day. He just has to be there at the beginning
to turn on the machine. Yeah, but apparently they introduce the rennet every 45 minutes. So he's got to be pressing the button every 45 minutes. So imagine, right? So imagine if you would be able to say take chol Yisrael and then send it off to a plant and just have a hechsher on it for cottage cheese, but you don't need the level that you need for gvinas Yisrael, you'll save tons of money, right? Because if you need it to be gvinas Yisrael, then you need the mashgiach to see the entire process, or according to the shach, even do the process. But if you don't need, if it's not called gvina, so all you need to know that it's kosher. If all you need to know it's kosher, a mashgiach yotze v'nichnas once every couple weeks is enough, right? So you see the difference, huge difference. So it's a major, major thing. What?
15 cents a container, right? 5 cents, 2 cents.
Depends how well it's marketed, I guess. You know, it's called these, you know, you put on, you know, I remember one time somebody sent a shalach manas and he said that he wrote in Hebrew, like in the Hashgacha they say, Leloch Shash Tevel V'Arla, you don't have to be concerned about anything that it says in the Torah, you know, any Yisur. So he wrote on there, on the shalach manas, like Leloch Shash Tevel V'Arla V'Shar Niskal and any of these Suri Anah, you know, that exist in the in the Chumash, you know, it's fine. So
anyways, why does it matter if it would have been
because Rav Moshe says since it doesn't need the rennet, so therefore it's not included in the gzera. Because the gzera of Chazal was anything that needs the rennet, then you have to have gvinas yisro. But since it doesn't need it, but they don't need it. So since they don't need it, he holds it's not a problem. That's what Moshe says.
What? He has to be there to know the rennet is kosher also.
Well, obviously, so I'm saying it's going to be told. If you need hechsher, I'm not saying you don't need hashgacha. I'm saying we don't need the level of gvinas yisro. That's the point.
However, you bring up a very good point that people don't bring up, which is one mashgiach doesn't cost that much even if they're there the whole time when you spread it over the amazing amount of product that's being made. So it should cost 5-10 cents more. Nevertheless, kosher cheese costs you almost twice as much. There's a tremendous amount of profiting being done by these agencies and in colludes with the companies, and that's why it's such a closed system. They really don't allow anybody to break into that system because it's so incredibly profitable.
Lately, they're bringing in more cheeses from Israel for that purpose. Anyway, so this is a big machlokes. Rav Moshe writes very interesting lashon in the tshuva. He basically says that he was writing a letter to Rav Shimon Schwab. The letter is written to Rav Shimon Schwab, and he tells Rav Shimon Schwab, you shouldn't make a big fuss over it, but you shouldn't publicize my heter either. But if people are doing it, don't tell them they're wrong. Like Rav Moshe is usually a little bit more to the point. If they're not going to have Gvinas Yisrael on the cottage cheese. So he's like a little bit wavery on that. Now, that being said, yogurt is a similar process to cottage cheese, but I guess it was stopped a little earlier. Something like that, right? It doesn't harden at all. So the Rabbi Heinemann from the Star K, he holds that it's not cheese at all. It's not cheese at all, and it's basically the halach of milk. It's for melt. It's basically milk because it's completely liquid, and therefore yogurt would have the halacha of milk. It would not have the halacha of the gvina at all. Okay.
But now, doesn't half a jar of milk has to be observed from the moment it's milked the cow to the moment it hits the container? So you can't just have somebody come in every.
Saying no. For the milking
process,
you still
have to watch the whole process.
Yeah. But the difference would be the exactly. No, but the question is once the milk is brought into the once the milk is milked, then we've seen the machines, and now it's delivered to the cheese factory. So the cheese factory, the question is, how much hashgacha do you need on that? Just the regular level of hashgacha?
If you're talking half Israel, then you have to watch it all the way until it gets into the container. Because otherwise, it's not half Israel. They could have mixed. They can mix in anything at any point. And if anything, this is worse because unlike regular cheese and butter, which you can't add impurities to this, you can. And I would think that yogurt would form even if you have some pig's milk.
Right. It's like regular milk. Right. You're saying is that even atzlachal v'yisrael shaboy, we shouldn't have to have hashgach until it's packaged. I have to look into that. I hear what you're saying. It's not enough to watch the entire milking process. You actually have to be involved in the packaging as well. I'm not sure about that. I hear what you're saying. Okay, now we touched upon one shiloh last week, and this is, we'll wrap up the topic with this, is we touched on one shiloh last week, which was the powdered milk. Now, in order to understand the shiloh of the powdered milk, we're going to talk about the butter. Okay, butter is one of those things that a lot of people tend to say is that even though we're makbid on chol v'yisrael, but we're makel on butter. Okay? Now, what's going on with the butter? Now, the idea with the butter is as follows. Butter kind of falls between the cracks. And what I mean to say is like this, is that we mentioned before from the Ramah that if the milk was milked with the intent to make it into cheese, and then it's made into cheese, then some hold it's not a problem of chol v'yisrael at all, as long as you saw the cheesing process. However, you have a different isser, that you need it to be gvinas yisrael. Now, what the chap with the butter is that the butter is similar to the cottage cheese in the sense that It does not require anything to harden. You don't harden it with rennet.
It's different.
It's cream.
Yeah,
it's basically cream of milk. So what you do is you cream the milk. You take all the cream out of the milk.
Right.
And so you take all the cream, and taking the cream out of the milk, somehow you make it harden, and it turns into butter. It's not a foreign hardening.
Having done this, I know exactly how it's done.
Oh, yeah?
It has nothing. It's not yogurt. It's not anything. It's not like anything else. You don't.
It's
sit
the cream
it.
Of the milk.
All it is the cream of the milk. That you spin.
Right.
You can make it yourself in a blender. Just let it go. Like people make cream and make whipped cream. If you continue your mixer going, it'll turn into butter. That's all there is to it.
But you need to get the proper creams and stuff from the milk.
You just have to have heavy cream.
Right.
As long as it's heavy cream, you will make it'll and you mix it long enough, it'll turn into butter. You don't need anything else.
Right.
So just mix the regular milk.
Regular milk will never turn.
No, because regular milk is 3% fat. Even if it gets fatty milk, whole milk, you need to get just the cream.
Right. Half and half, and heavy cream, you have every heavy cream.
Just the cream and the milk, and it's so now. The thing is like this: the shitas that were makel on butter held that butter had a unique status. That butter, since you're not buying it from the goy as milk. So it wasn't nichlal in the gezerah of milk. It's not milk. And you can't make butter with a treif milk. It doesn't have the same concentration of fat and all that. So it won't work. So therefore, it doesn't have the chashash of chalav, and it's not chalav. But on the other hand, since it doesn't have to be hardened, it's not included in the gezerah of gvina either. So butter's status fell between the cracks because it wasn't covered under the halacha of gvina, and it wasn't covered under the halacha of chalav because it was milked to make this thing. So it's unlikely that the goy would have mixed in anything which would not allow it to turn into butter. Okay? So since it was milked with that intention, and you're not buying it from him in the state of milk, you're buying it from him in the state of butter, and butter is not cheese, there's no gzer which covers this exact product. So therefore,
you can't make it non-kosher, it has to be kosher.
Yeah, so this...
You don't call it Israel for milk?
For butter.
I mean butter. You don't call it Israel?
Correct. So this is the machlokes in the minhagim. Okay, so the mechaber brings down...
Technically, you don't need any kosher.
Technically, in the old days, nowadays I'll read you some articles about that. But in technically speaking, in Sif Gimel, the Mechaber brings down two minhagim, and the minhagim were like this: Chema shall oved kechavim, ein moichin la'anshei hamakim shenoyegin by hetter. It's okay if people are noyeg the hetter. And the Ramah says that is the minig. And indeed, the chayadam and others, they all say that the minig is to be makel on the minig of chema, of butter. So that would mean that something which is unlikely that the goy would milk the cow to create this item, because it's not likely that he can't meet, it would just ruin it, and you're not buying it from him in the state of milk either, so you're like in between, and it's not cheese, because that would be covered under a different gezeira. It fell between the cracks, and that's mutter mekra adin. So therefore, you'll be able to buy, according to this minig, the regular OUD butter, because it's not covered under any gezeira.
This minig, you go to Europe and you can buy butter without any hechsher whatsoever. Under this.
Yeah, in the old days. In the old days, which is where all they did was exactly what you're saying. So the common concept is basically what you're saying, is that since the process for butter is there's nothing foreign introduced, it's only the milk, therefore it would not be covered under Gvina Sakam, it would not be covered under Chalav Yisrael, and therefore you could just buy OUD theoretically butter. Okay, now there was another minig, and some were machmir in the minig, but that was not the standard minig. However, nowadays things are totally different, and I'll read you this.
Right, these days they emulsify.
Basically, what happens is that they don't take the natural creams, What they do is they take all sorts of different unnatural creams in order to make it more creamy. So the butter that we're getting is not natural butter anymore. And therefore, not only do you need a hechsher, as a matter of fact, the OU writes over here, I'm reading from the OU, he says, like this, okay? Before understanding the kosher issues involved with butter, it's necessary to understand the fundamentals of production. The primary raw material butter is cream. Not all creams are equal, however, and from a kosher's perspective, an important distinction is sweet cream and whey cream. Sweet cream is the fat of the separated milk. Whey cream is, in contrast, a byproduct of the cheese. So first of all, if they're using whey,
right, that's different.
Then it's totally different, because the whey itself is subject to Chal V'Yisrael. Because the whey, or Gvinas Yisrael, according to some, because the whey is a byproduct of the cheese. Right. So if they're introducing cheesy items now into the butter, now you're back into the other sugya. Okay? The butter is washed, etc. In some butter productions, the cream is cultured before. Now, anything using a whey cream is not going to be okay. If it's using only a sweet cream, maybe that's okay. But he says like this: even if a facility only processes sweet cream without any additives, there are no guarantees that the product is free of kosher concerns. Sweet cream butter is often made in dairy plants that also manufacture chocolate milk, eggnog, sour cream. So the things which are used to pasteurize the cream have been used a minute ago to pasteurize total treif. So therefore, it's not like anymore you go to the farm and the little lady out there made her butter. They're using creams and see, everything is so in the markets today, everything is so compartmentalized. So you have one person making the butter, but you have another person making the sweet cream, another person making this ingredient. So the butters today, the OU says that they won't even give. It actually says a very interesting thing. It says here, some attempts have been made to justify the purposes of non-supervised butter altogether, etc. However, there's a lack of definitive information just to justify relying on such rationale. So the OU does not believe in that. And what happened was the kosher agencies made a meeting back in the mid-90s to basically get together and say that they're not giving any hechsher at all. Forget Chal V'Yisrael, any hechsher to any sort of butter production which contains multiple sources of cream. Because it's too complicated, because they can't track everything. So therefore they just don't do it. So in other words, it comes out that the butter is a little complicated.
Well, it's very strange to say that everything needs a cut. No, they're obviously self-serving, but nevertheless they are correct.
But they know the industry.
Once they started introducing, like I said, when they started emulsifying things and started introducing all these other crap, then
pretty much.
Then it became
And not only that, he says in Europe it may be easier because you're not allowed to produce multiple creams in one factory. So therefore you could track it easier. But in the United States it's complicated, and therefore they don't recommend that. But as far as the Chal V'Yisrael issue goes, strictly the Chal V'Yisrael, so if it has a Hashgacha, but it's OUD, and you're Makben a Chal V'Yisrael, there are a lot of mekilim on that, you know, because assuming they're using the sweet cream, then if it's a sweet cream, then the assumption was that it's made from milk, and then you're back to the original minig, which was that anything made of sweet cream does not need Chal V'Yisrael.
It's only sweet cream, or is it sometimes made from milk?
Probably in the sweet cream. So this is a big machlokes. You know, lemaisa. I think most people are more comfortable if they're doing keeping chametz salt, they just keep it all the way. But this is the ikar minig. Okay. Now. Right.
All kinds of spreads that have come out. Half butter and half God knows. Really, you should never be eating that stuff.
What this the smart balance and stuff like that? That's worse than margarine.
That's margarine.
It's margarine.
That is margarine. That's not even milk. It's got oil.
Is that better than margarine?
Not necessarily. It is margarine.
It's essentially margarine.
It is margarine.
And
it's vegetable oil.
So you may as well just rather
eat
butter.
Much better off with butter.
it's vegetable oil.
It's worse than vegetable oil because it's even more unhydrated.
I thought it's healthy to eat that stuff.
Hydrogenated.
Yeah, it's even more. It has more free radicals.
I thought it's healthy that stuff is supposed to butter. Everyone's like, no, don't touch butter. Butter's terrible for you.
Less fat, the better.
It helps build up your immune system.
There's nothing wrong with butter. It's all
less fat, the better from any source, I say.
So you would stay away from butter if you could.
I'd stay away from butter and stay away from both because it's too much fat.
Just have a good piece of toast and you're done.
You can put fat-free cream cheese on it.
I completely disagree. I think you're much better off with fat than you are with toast, which is basically pure carbohydrate.
That's true. We're better off being vegetables.
Well, that's good.
That's right.
I was going to say, I think that these doctors should take it outside.
Right, no, that's
no, I agree.
I try not to eat anything. I agree. I try to eat all the I can't read the first few words.
The thing is, with butter, you eat something with butter, as long as it's not carbohydrates, it actually stays in your stomach a lot longer, your insulin doesn't go up nearly as much, you don't get hungry nearly as fast, you don't make, it's actually probably much better for you. It's not the
butter. What, then these fake things?
You eat with the butter.
So, but what about the fake... all right, it's interesting.
Better off with just vegetables and fruits. When you fry the
butter. That's better than oil.
Better than oil.
It is?
I think it's all much better than
let's say smart balance versus butter. You're much better with
butter. Don't pan.
Pan
is just olive oil.
All right. So I'll tell pass on the message.
Vegetables.
I don't have to hide the butter anymore. I was always like trying to figure. Right. So what? Hide the bread. That's the guy. That, yeah.
Hide the bread. Bread. Potatoes.
Yeah.
Any of those.
That's right.
Pure unopposed carbohydrates.
What about whole wheat? Whole wheat bread?
I'll make it.
Donuts.
Bread. Yeah. Definitely not donuts.
That's a hole that you get all the
if you're looking at health just purely from a health perspective, the worst possible thing is carbohydrates, especially processed carbohydrates. That's just wasted space.
Interesting. All right. So speaking of donuts, so now once we understand the concept of the butter, we can understand better the issue of the powdered milk that I mentioned last week. There was the kula mentioned by the Har Tzvi. The Har Tzvi is Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, and he has a kula of the powdered milk. Now, his kula was not widely accepted, but he held that the powdered milk does not have to be Chol V'Yisrael. Now, I looked into the tshuva this week. Over the course of the week, I read it over again. His primary argument is not simply that, well, it's unlike... Now, what's the point of the powdered milk is that since it's unlikely that anyone would introduce non-kosher milk into the milk to make it powdered milk, the reason being there's a lot more water base in the non-kosher milk than the kosher milk. So therefore, to dehydrate it would be a much more expensive process. So it's cheaper to dehydrate kosher milk and make it into powdered milk than the non-kosher. You could theoretically do it, but
I was always like butter. You can only eat cow's milk.
It's definitely, I don't know if you could or can't, but it's not likely. It's very expensive. So now the his svara is not simply, well, it's not logical, because we already mentioned to say that would be the kula of the pre chadash, that whenever it's not logical you can be makel, and we don't go with the pre chadash. What his kula is that since it's not logical, therefore now you could treat it as butter, because now that if you would just buy the milk and powder it yourself, that's a problem. But if you've received it from the non-Jew in the powdered state, the non-Jew already switched it to the powder, now you bought the powder, it's like you're buying the butter. So just like if the guy takes the milk and makes it into butter, now you can't say it's Chalav Yisrael because I'm not buying the milk. You don't say it's Gvina because I'm not buying Gvina, I'm buying this. And this item, there's no concern, and there's no gzera on the item. So says the Har Tzvi, the same goes for the powdered milk. That the powdered milk, there's no concern on it, and it's not considered milk anymore, it's a new item. And since it's a new item, it falls between the cracks. All the poskim disagree with the Har Tzvi on many accounts. No, the point is that this is not likely that it's made out of non-kosher milk. That's the point. So it's not likely, and it's not included in the Xero. So now the reason that most argue on him was for two reasons. First of all, similar to what you're saying, Avram Yeshua, is that it's not that unlikely. I mean, it's not impossible. It's not. So that's the moment. Two is that they don't hold that that's a significant change to the item to change its status. In other words, yeah, you take milk into butter, you could say, well, it's not chalav, it's not gvina, it's chema, it's something different. So that's a new item. But you can't say milk turned into powdered milk is a new item. It's still close enough to the milk that it will be included in the gzeir of chalav. So therefore, they were machmir. Now, the word got out that the Chazon Ish was makel on this. And the Chazon Ish held to the Har Tzvi's psak. The Stipler writes that there was only one time the Chazon Ish was makel. The Chazon Ish was makel before 1950. For wartime soldiers who were sick in a place that there was no milk to be found, and only powdered milk. You know, so people took the Chazon Ish that he was makel on the whole Indian Chalav Yisrael because the government regulations. So no, he wasn't makel on that kula. He was makel on the only with the powdered milk, and only in the case it was a sick person, etc., etc. So the standard psak was not to go with the Har Tzvi, and the Rabbanut does not necessarily accept the psak of the Har Tzvi either. The psak of the Har Tzvi would carry a lot of ramifications, because like I mentioned last week, many OUD products are made with powdered milk, not with real milk. You know, you buy Entenmann's donuts, you know, whatever it is, so, you know, we dealt with the Pasistral thing the different week. But the Chalav issue, it's all powdered milk. So if you would go with the Tzvi Pesach Frank's Kula, you'd be able to buy a lot more items that are out there. What? Well, it's not known nafkamina because OU is not, it goes with their Moshe's psak anyway, even on regular milk. So it's not nogeya to the OU. Right, what's nogeya is to someone keeps Chalav Yisrael.
Do you hold Moshe's psak on regular milk?
The Moshe himself writes that if you don't need to use it, then don't use it.
So you only drink Chalav.
So I go with the Moshe's psak.
I go with
the Moshe's psak. He says you could use it if you need to, but you don't need to. Don't.
So you don't use it. You don't need to. So those days he goes on a hunting safari in Africa.
I mean, Moshe's. Let's put things in perspective. Moshe's tshuva was written in 1954. I mean, I can't imagine that the situation of Chalav Yisrael in 1954 is what it is today. You know what I mean? So it's not the same matzav. It's just, you know, it's a totally different situation. Okay?
On the other hand, it might make things more difficult.
What?
On the other hand,
no, because that's really what it says in the Gemara. So Teretz is if there's a reason to be lenient, but you know, otherwise, you know, I'm a simple guy. If it says in the Gemara, then let's go with it. Okay, what we're going to try to cover next week, I think we're finished with this, and I can't talk anymore anyway, so, is that we're going to talk about the Indian of Simonim. When you buy Basar Shen Salam and Ayin, etc., is when you have deliveries from a non-Jew, you know, also, when non-Jews are involved with the food packaging, etc., how to deal with that. Okay? Shkoyach.